The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
One of our best shows here on Tony Curry Radio on the TKR app. Thanks to the over 100,000 people who have already downloaded the TKR app. We love you and thank you for that. Of course, you can listen to us on the Tony Curry Radio podcast platform. Wherever you get your podcast, if it's got music in it, you can check out, of course, Spotify, anywhere else. We're on every major indice out there. And this is one of our best shows, the UAB Director's Chair, because he is the director, the athletic director of the UAB Blazers, Mark Ingram. Happy holidays to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm great, Tony. Happy holidays to you as well.
Thank you very much. And depending on when people are listening to the show, we're going to talk about some Thanksgiving. We'll talk about some Christmas stuff. I've got some Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We always sprinkle a little rock and roll for you because I know you love your classic rock. But let's get into this Lane Kiffin talk. Now, again, depending on when you're listening to the show, he may have already pulled the trigger. But we're recording here on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. As of yesterday, he met with his players and said, everything you're hearing is a rumor. I know nothing about it. I've accepted no job. I haven't even thought about it. I'm thinking about the next game. This is really interesting because we heard Tommy Tuberville talk about the Pine Box. We talk about Nick Saban, you know, when he's ask me one more time, I'm not leaving Miami. And we know that there's talks going on. Now, Lane may not be in direct talks, but it's going through his agent. But when you hear him say, I mean, there have been numerous outlets that have had breaking news as recent as Monday saying that after the Egg Bowl, he will accept the Auburn job. What's your take on a coach that meets with his players and says, listen, I don't know what they're talking about?
Well, first of all, Tony, you know, I don't work at either of these schools that you're asking me about.
Yeah.
So not really to specifically speak about, you know, Coach Kiffin or that situation directly, but you know, I guess if a coach says that to his team that that it's a rumor, it's not true, you gotta take them at their word, I suppose. I do remember, and you brought up Coach Saban when he left the Dolphins. I remember he did a great interview after he had accepted the Alabama job. I don't know if it was on 60 Minutes or mm-hmm. it was a different sort of news source than what you would consider typical.
Yeah.
And he talked about the challenge of, you know, every day being asked by the media, and maybe somebody said, oh, you know, you lied. And he said, well, you're sitting here with a team of people whose livelihood is based on, talking about the Dolphins, their livelihood is based on success and winning. And you know, the players have a shelf life, right? Pros.
Yeah.
You're trying to give them everything that you can, and you're forced to be in a position, unfortunately, to not tell the truth. You know, how he phrased it, I'm sure was a lot better. And I remember thinking that it was really well put.
If I'm not mistaken, I think he also apologized later on, saying, listen, I probably could have handled this a little differently.
Yeah, it's just hard. It's a tough thing. If there's an opportunity for you that's out there, that's something you're intrigued by better in some fashion, you know, as a grown adult and somebody who's trying to do right by their own family and themselves professionally, that's important. And at the same time, you've got this whole team, whether if it's a college team, it's, you know, 110 to 120 players and, you know, big staffs, whether it's college or pro, you got all these people whose lives are also affected by that.
I hear you, and I understand there are a lot of dominoes that fall when a head coach goes. I mean, it affects everything, but the two different ways you could go here. First of all, just deny and say, I'm not talking about this, or just saying, I'm not talking about this. You guys can make up your stories, but I'm not addressing this, and I will address it. The second thing is I've never heard a coach be honest and say, listen, we're having a great run here at Ole Miss. We're doing fantastic. Obviously, the Auburn job is a great position. And if I have any information about me perhaps going there, I will certainly send it along to you. But my phone rings. I know you had it with Bill Clark. I mean, Bill told me that his phone rang all the time. He didn't say he answered it necessarily. But, you know, when you're successful somewhere and people are poaching you, they want you, that talk is going to come up. And the fact that he met with his team kind of rubs me because, you know, what happens in the locker room stays in the locker room, right? And I know, obviously, if he would told them something, hey, listen, I'm going to leave after the Egg Bowl, it would have gotten out. You got 120 kids with Twitter accounts, they would have gotten it out. So I realize he's got to protect those kids and protect the respect of the office. But I don't know. It seems strange. The writing's on the wall, and if he doesn't take the Auburn job, it would just be a shocker at this point. And for him to meet with his players on a Tuesday before Thanksgiving and say, "Listen, it's a bunch of hooey. Don't believe it." It feels like he's almost giving them hope that he's staying.
And maybe he is, but you know, what I've learned in my career is that there's a lot of ways to handle things, and almost all of them you will be criticized for to some degree. The pundits,
true.
The critics will always be there, and somebody's going to tell you you didn't do it right. It doesn't even matter what we're talking about. You know, there's some, whether it's a player or a fan or somebody's going to say, well, they could have done it this other way. Yeah, you could have. You know, there's peril to all directions that you might go. And, you know, again, it's a tough spot to be in. You're trying to do right by as many people as you can, which is not always easy.
Yeah. Let me ask you, this is the UAB director's chair. He's the athletic director, Mark Ingram of the UAB Blazers, and basketball season's well underway. We got football season coming to an end. Greatly appreciate his time every single week. We're very grateful to have him. You and I have this agreement. I'll ask you anything. You don't necessarily have to answer these questions. With the Bill Clark situation, speaking of changes in hires, obviously you want to make a hire of a football coach. I'm assuming you're getting down to the nitty-gritty, correct?
We are.
Okay. And the fact that Bill Clark was, of course, the head coach at UAB and then retired because he needed to have some back issues and some surgery, and it certainly appears, at least you said on the show last week, he's not going to be the next head coach at UAB, but more than likely will coach somewhere else. What do you think the feeling will be about Bill Clark inside the UAB fan base?
Oh, look, you know, Coach Clark was coached 6 seasons here, and did a great job. Obviously, we were bowl eligible all 6 of those seasons. I think I wasn't here, but I don't think we were selected in 2014, but we were eligible. And then in 2020, we were asked, sent an invitation to the Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa to play South Carolina. And they had a COVID issue, and then we ended up ultimately not playing that game. But we were invited to that game. Yeah. You know, we got gear with the logo on it.
Yeah, there you go.
we did all we could do that, and we had won our conference championship that year. So we had a great run here with Coach Clark, and I can't imagine that people would think, you know, long term anything past that.
Yeah, there was the thought process that perhaps he didn't really have to retire, but he did, so he could have a little separation between his last year with UAB and perhaps his next year at his next team. Is that safe to say? And I don't have a problem with that. I think that's a very elegant way to go out, particularly if you have to have back surgery during that offseason.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you know, Bill's a young man, and hopefully his procedure went well. And if he wants to coach, I hope that he'll get that opportunity.
Does he still have an office there?
Oh, no. Coach, he retired from UAB. So he's from the state of Alabama. And I assume is collecting his retirement from the state, but I couldn't say that with certainty, but I'm making that assumption based on his phrasing of retirement.
There you go. And we have not gotten a chance. He is Mark Ingram, the athletic director, of course, for the UAB Blazers. This is the UAB director's chair right here. You can hear it on every major podcast out there. It's one of our most listened to podcasts because the UAB fan nation gets after it. I was going to mention the LSU game. Obviously, we're about a week removed from that, but it's unfortunate that LSU, even Brian Kelly said that was our best game of the year. And unfortunately, it came at the hands of the UAB Blazers. But you had to feel pretty excited. I just wanted to get your thoughts real quick. First quarter of that game, man, UAB was running up and down the football field. I'm like, all right. And that was a really funky Saturday. There were some really close games with Ohio State, with Michigan. Teams were not blowing teams out. And I thought, you know what? There is a chance. But it didn't happen.
Yeah, both teams were throwing haymakers there in that first quarter.
Man, it was great.
Yeah, we looked really good, and but so did they, you know. But you know, over time, you know, they became the number 6 team in the country, or whatever they are in the latest poll, you know. And they're really talented, and showed that. But I was proud of our guys for giving what they had, and for really for showing up. You know, it's easy to walk into a place like that and just be so intimidated that you really never show up. That wasn't the case. We came right out and looked good and looked really smooth. And I don't want to say effortless, but we really had a couple of nice long sustaining drives for scores that I was impressed by. I was really proud of them.
And now we know why the CFP put them number five. They're that good. So fantastic.
That is five as of yesterday.
Yep. And number five with two losses. We've never had a two-loss team get in, but they're certainly knocking on the door.
A little bit more parity this year than in some years, it seems.
A little bit. You know, and that word parity has come up a lot. And some people would say that parity is not good. Some people would say it's great for the sport. Certainly we have that in college hoops. But then if you look every single year, you get Gonzaga, Kansas, Kentucky, and Duke at the top every single year. So I don't know what that means. All right, so with Thanksgiving and the beginning of the holiday season, I asked you before we started the show, and I want to put you on the spot right off the top of your head. I want you to give me five things that you're thankful for. They can be personal, they can be family, they could be professional, whatever you got. What do you got?
Well, I've got a great family, Tony. You've met them. I got a great wife and
yes,
kids, and I've got I work in a great place, UAB. I live in a great town, Birmingham. I got great friends. I don't have a lot of friends, but the ones I got are really, really good and special to me. So I have a lot to be thankful for.
There you go. So now Christmas time is coming around the corner. I'm not sure if you're going to be sitting on Santa's lap here soon, but give me something that
he hopes not.
Give me something. There's a Santa Claus shortage. You and I could probably make about 20 grand during the off season, by the way. I'm thinking about working at Bass Pro Shops later on this week. College football, give me your wish list for things you'd like to see change in college football, whether it could actually happen or not. I'm assuming your first thing would be like get rid of the NIL in college football, but what would be some things that you would have a wish list for Santa Claus about college football or college athletics, period, since you're the athletic director?
Yeah, you know, the NIL, I don't mind NIL in the manner to which it was intended. These collectives are just a loophole to introduce pay for play. That would be on the wish list if we could do that. I'd like to see replays move a little quicker, though I know our officials are trying to get it right. So I appreciate that they're trying to get it right, but trying to find a way to cut down those breaks and keep the pace of play a little bit better for all of us, for the players, starting with them, but obviously for the fans and the people enjoying the game. I am really glad that we implemented the targeting rule years ago. I think that's helped player safety. I'm not in love with the fact that players get ejected. I wish there was some way that we could figure out a plan to, you know, maybe there's a warning or something, and you know, there's a penalty, and we could implement all sorts of things. You got to sit out for the next five plays or something. I don't know, but ejecting a player is so hurtful to everybody. And they're not always intentional. Sometimes these targeting, you know, these guys get called for targeting and they could have stopped themselves. A lot of times they can't, and they get called for targeting, and then now they're out of the game. And it's such a huge letdown for the entire team. It just feels too painful to me. But all that being said, since we implemented all these things, concussions are down, and that's been good for player safety, which I'm 100% for. So those are a couple of things right off the top of my head for that. I wish that somehow in terms of conference realignment that we could go back to the way it was in the early days, which is all geography.
Yep.
I think geography would help fans and schools and fan bases and create rivalry again. When you've got association with teams from the other side of the country, you can't get there without flying. It just makes creating real rivalries makes it really difficult. So I wish that we could wave a magic wand and all the conferences sort of be equal in size and be based mostly on geography. But I'm not seeing a lot of these things happen in our future. So if everyone asks Santa for these things, maybe we get it.
There you go. There's a couple things that I wanted to bring up to you. And as athletic director, I'm curious to see what you're thinking. As a fan, it just drives me crazy. The 1 second timeout before field goal kicks drives me absolutely crazy. I don't know if it works. Aldo Greco, who of course played for Auburn and played for the Tennessee Titans, Houston Oilers, used to tell me that it would freeze him more when they didn't call a timeout because he was expecting a timeout and it didn't happen. It happened several times in the Auburn game a couple of weeks ago. They had three timeouts. They called three timeouts, waiting to the last second. Of course, the kicker made all three of them and made the fourth. That drives me crazy. The other thing is on instant replays, and you mentioned sometimes it takes a little longer than we care to discuss, but on instant replays, when you've got a team doing hurry up and they're not in a hurry up mode, Because they don't want to have substitutions on the other side or whatever. And they're all of a sudden going into a hurry mode because they know the previous play is going to be looked at. I wish there was some type, I don't know if you give it 5 seconds, because sometimes the instant replay is just not ready in time. Depending, of course, whether it's a Conference USA game, an AAC game, or an SEC game where you have more cameras. And I've seen that happen numerous times this year where we all knew that wasn't a catch, or maybe the player was out of bounds because they snapped the ball and it just didn't get to the instant replay or the replay booth fast enough. It was called off. The other thing is, and I think you'll totally agree with me, what in the hell is going on with false starts this year? I've seen so many false starts of the UAB Blaze this year. It is. It's just an absolute killer. It's only 5 yards, but it always puts you behind the chains. But not just UAB, with everybody this year. Is that because of different and new manipulative, if you will, or what kind of formations we're doing on offense? Why are there so many false starts? It is the new blocking in the back penalty for me.
Yeah, it's because of how many teams shift their defensive line. They've watched enough of our game tape and their opponent's game tape. They know what our patterns are. And so what they'll do, notice how many defensive linemen will shift. They'll get down in their stance. We're all in our ready position. We appear to be set. And our quarterback does, you know, makes a motion like they're going to snap the ball, but they don't clap. And then instead sort of go to a resting position and look back to the sideline for whatever, you know, play call they want to switch to. Well, before that happens, when they're doing the, let's call it the fake snap, the defensive line shifts, and, you know, you're an offensive lineman and you're locked in on, okay, I got to block this guy, and this is what I got to do, and I got to get off the ball, and he's really good, and I got to be quick, and man, he's strong, and I got to get leverage, and I got to get low, and this is where I got to be. You're thinking of all this stuff, and then that whole group, you know, three or four defensive linemen shift at the exact same time. It doesn't take much to flinch.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's not always a big step. It's just a little lunge, the tiniest little lunge, and now you're 320-pound guard. As you know, a little lunge is like a full step for you and me, man.
Are you going to do some flinching tomorrow or at the Thanksgiving table?
Yeah, I'm going to do more than flinch at the table.
All right, Mark Ingram, he's the UAB Athletic Director. This is the UAB Director's Chair. You can hear it wherever you get your podcast, anywhere. We're on every major industry, including Spotify. Did you see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? I know you did not, but I want to ask you.
I did not. I love it, but I did not see it.
I said it was the most diverse group of people I've ever seen, and therefore I thought it was going to be the most uncomfortable but the most exciting. Eurythmics, Pat Benatar, Carly Simon, Judas Priest, Dolly Parton, Duran Duran, Lionel Richie were the big ones that got in. You look at the class of next year, it's not good. This is a monster class. And to see Dolly Parton singing with Rob Halford from Judas Priest on stage was just weird. And there was a couple of moments that was kind of like, okay. But the fact that it's on HBO Max, so there's lots of F-bombs, which I think is always good for award shows. Because everyone, Eminem was also inducted, and he certainly shared some things that I think made some people roll their eyes and scoff and go, wow, pretty amazing stuff. For whatever reason, it feels like these rock and rollers or these acts that get in feel like they are, it's like a locker room. They're totally comfortable. They're not playing before a worldwide audience on network television. They're in their own home and they can be who they really want to be. And I think it's fantastic. Now, you mentioned Dolly Parton. Now, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the man who actually started the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was inducted this year. He's a lawyer. And he said he was sitting there having some spare ribs at some Chinese restaurant somewhere near Cleveland. And someone said, you know, there's a Baseball Hall of Fame, there's a Football Hall of Fame, there's an NBA Hall of Fame. Why don't we have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? And I realize when you say rock and roll, why would Dolly Parton be in the Rock and Roll? It's got to be something. There is a Music Hall of Fame, but I don't know if it's all-encompassing like the musical aspects. You could certainly make an argument that, say, the band Alabama, which is one of the greatest country bands over head, should be in the Rock and Roll. Do you like the fact that there's all these different bands getting in?
Oh, I think it's always good to recognize people for their achievement. It doesn't really matter to me if they're, you know, which Hall of Fame they're in. I think the point is you're taking the opportunity to point out what an impact this person had on the industry and fans and people. And, you know, music is something that inspires people. It creates a mood. It, you know, when you're watching a movie, you know, or a television show, there's music in the background that helps set the mood. If it didn't work, they wouldn't have the music. It wouldn't exist, right? It wouldn't be necessary. But you know, think of the screenplay or the soundtrack for things like Star Wars and how impactful that music is to, you know, when you hear that Darth Vader music, I don't care where you are, you know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's great when you recognize people for, you know, their impact on society, whether it's entertainment, music, or whatever. I think it's all positive.
You know, I don't know how many times we have to be told, millions of times, and you and I are certainly getting up there. We're mature men, and we keep hearing these things. Believe in what you believe in. Have a vision, and don't let it go. Don't have anyone tell you you can't do what you want to do. And every single story, I mean, Dolly Parton lived in a two-room house with no running water, and she's written 110 chart-topping songs, which is just like, it just makes your mind blow up. Lionel Richie was sitting there outside a club one night and had his saxophone with him. Who the hell takes a saxophone to a club? And they had some Star Search going on with this band called the Commodores, and he said, "Do you mind if I try to play with you?" And next thing you know, he's the lead singer of the Commodores. I mean, it's the stories just go on and on and on. It's just amazing. You never hear the story of the guy who's self-made. He's privileged. He's got money. He's just buying bands and creating this music. Maybe you do. Maybe it's a Richard Branson type of thing. But for the most part, man, you just hear these stories about being in the right place, the right time. And then you realize, you know, as you get to be our age, there are no coincidences in life, are there? It's just you make your own breaks by getting out, engaging and networking with people and taking chances.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of musicians and artists in general, comedians are this way. They're inspired by hardship.
Yep.
And they write about that hardship, and they you know, what the part that I find amazing is their ability, you know, it's like, when did you, you know, you grew up homeless or without a, or wherever you grew up, how did you learn how to play an instrument? Where did that come from? You know, that's what amazes me. Mm-hmm. But their songwriting in terms of lyrics and music and the stories they tell so frequently comes from those hardships, which I just think is incredible. You know, they think with a different part of their brain than I do. And, you know, Dolly Parton grew up in a town called Sevierville, Tennessee, mm-hmm. which is where my college roommate is from. And it is a tiny little place.
Yeah,
you know, people think of that sort of Gatlinburg area as this Pigeon Forge, like it's one big place. Sevierville, you pass through to get there. You don't, you know, most people don't know they pass through it. And it's small today. I right. can only imagine what it was like, you know, when she grew up. It was a little bitty place. So, you know, people that are determined, you know, strong will is hard to stop.
There is no doubt. Hey, Mark, I'm thankful for you, man. Thank you so much for the show today.
Thankful for you too, brother.
Appreciate you, man. Let's catch up next week. Will we have a hire by next week?
Yeah, well, we sure hope to. You know, okay. the process is definitely heated up.
Okay.
Over the last few days, and as the season grows to an end, and you know, my job is to make sure that we find the very best person to lead us forward in a new era with the American Athletic Conference, and so I've pledged to my staff and our university and our fans that I'm going to turn over every stone that I can. And the easy thing to do would just be to stop and just pick whatever we've got. Right.
Yeah, sure.
Pick anybody that's interested, whether it's the interim Coach Vincent or somebody else that we've already talked to. The easy thing would be to say, well, they're good enough. And, you know, we could just stop because aren't I tired of talking to people? Well, yeah, I've talked to a lot of people, but that's my job. Right. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. And so I will continue that for our players, for our fans, for the university is to turn over every stone and make sure we feel like we've got, you know, a dynamic leader that can take us into the next era of UAB football.
I bet we have something to talk about next week. Thank you, my friend. Happy Thanksgiving to you. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, brother. Happy Thanksgiving.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.